My name is Brian. I like most people. I'll be your friend too. If you want to stay, this is my podcast. I hope you like it. Rate, like, and subscribe. And now it's time to play. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, and everyone in between, too. Brian Bogart has a podcast, The Podcast, Episode 2. I'm your host, Brian Bogart. Bienvenidos. Welcome. Willkommen. Bienvenue. Welcome. Shout out to the writers and collaborators of the musical Cabaret for that introduction. Joel Grey, Liza Minnelli, you know who you are. How we doing? I'm on my lunch break. This is pretty much when I'm always going to be recording these. I've been good. Thank you for asking. I did my first day since the pandemic working in an office space. I have a friend who kind of works in one of those WeWorks. I've been very bored working from home, hence the existence of this podcast. And it was good to be back in an office, and it always helps to remind myself why I don't want to go back to them. So I think it's a good call to go there once or twice a week. Here's the real life hack. I don't have to be there at like 8 or 9 a.m. as I was so used to in my previous fast-paced corporate life. They people show up there 10, 10:30. Doesn't really seem to matter. Work the rest of your afternoon there. Enjoy the amenities. Enjoy the coffee. I don't know. What do you guys think? I'm guessing most people listening probably prefer working from home. write to me. Let me know what you like to do. It's been a slow month sales-wise. You know, the economy's got people spooked. And the software that I sell, it's more, you know, let's just say it's not like something that's a necessity. It's a necessity if you're running an art business, but art's not always on the top of people's list of priorities when you're going through a recession and there's wars and genocide happening. I guess we might as well get into that part. I've had a hard time thinking of anything besides the Ukrainian conflict. That's just, I've been borderline obsessed with it for 5 months now because it is the singular most world-changing event of the century that's happened and may even happen in the century. You know, as the book of the 21st century is written, there will probably be a pre and post February 24th, 2022 kind of section to it. And if you are asking yourself, what would I have done in the late 1930s, early 1940s, as all this conflict was brewing, you know, and there are these systemic genocides happening, and you're asking yourself, what would I have done? You're doing it right now. You're doing it right now. So if you think to yourself, oh, well, I mean, if I was alive in World War II, I would have obviously helped the Jews. I would have obviously, you know, done what I can to fight the Axis powers. Well, if you're not doing it now, chances are you wouldn't have done it back then. It seems so obvious. Hindsight is always 20/20. It's so easy to say I would have stood up to Hitler when Hitler, you know, back then was, you know, more enigmatic figure. It's like you had people in the U.S. who weirdly like supported his regime and his message and still do, obviously. Actually, I read something that neo-Nazis are pretty much waiting for the greatest generation to die off before they really start making themselves known again. Because the greatest generation, the World War II vets, they're the only ones who stood face-to-face with the fully realized atrocities of the Nazis. And so, once they're dead, not anyone to face those atrocities or recollect what they were like. Exact same motherfucking thing happening in Xinjiang with the Uyghurs. Their homeland is in Western China, in the Xinjiang region. Xi Jinping, the ruler of China and the head of the Chinese Communist Party, has systematically been detaining them in concentration camps, forcing labor on them. So if you've bought anything from H&M, congratulations, you're funding genocide. Either way, genocide just happens in the retail. That's dark, but it's true. Supply chains and logistics, genocide, forced labor, it's just part of the equation. It's part of the math. And if you want to do anything to combat that, I'll actually drop some resources. I don't know what to do besides, I guess, either talk about it and make sure that I spend money where it belongs. Small example, probably insignificant example. But my mom's from Cuba, mentioned that in the first episode. And, you know, with how I look, I'm the whitest looking person who ever lived. So sometimes I feel like I got to bang that drum just because if I do start speaking in Spanish or talking about Cuban stuff, people don't just think I have a Latin or Latino fetish. So probably worth noting that. But for my mom's birthday last year, I got her a wood carving out of the Havana port, you know, around where she grew up. And it was really nice carving. And then after the Russian invasion started, I didn't know this, but the company that I had bought that carving from based out of Kyiv in Ukraine, and they said, hey, you know, we, God, this sounds so virtue signaling. It's really not. It's just, I bought them from Ukraine on accident initially. And they sent me a message after that, and they said, hey, I don't know if you saw, we're getting invaded. Little did I know that they're talking to someone probably as obsessed with this conflict as anyone else. And they're like, you know, if we'd really appreciate it if you got, you know, if you could support us. So I bought another thing from them, whatever I can do to offset whatever's happening to them. I know that's not even a drop in the bucket. But the Ukrainians, to their credit, fighting extremely valiantly. It's a very, very messy conflict and one with genocidal implications. You know, this is the attempted actualization of, you know, someone who fancies himself as a czar trying to reunite a failed empire, you know, an empire that collapsed with the collapse of the Soviet Union, and Ukraine became a sovereign nation because of it. So, I don't know, there's so many different threads you can kind of go into because there's the geopolitical implications, you know, sovereign borders, armies, genocide, everything else that that entails. And then there's the environmental impact. The biggest polluters in the world are the defense industry. The defense industry in general are the biggest polluters bar none. So it's almost irrelevant to talk about climate change, environmental impact, what we can do to slow the effects of climate change, when almost all that is irrelevant unless we can figure out a way to stop blowing each other up with missiles. That might be the only way to save the planet, is to find a way to abolish war. And then we can maybe talk about electrical vehicles, you know? I'm not saying electrical vehicles aren't helping. I'm not saying that, I mean, of course, I'm a fan of renewables, and we should find ways to incentivize renewable energy sources and go into research and development of that. But there's just a lot of stuff that people do not consider when they are trying to create these be-all, end-all, you know, Green New Deals, energy plans, stuff like that. And I'm not saying I'm not for those, but there's so many more considerations, unfortunately, to take in mind. This is just the sad reality of the world we live in. So if you're pro-environment, be anti-war, and let's see if keeping that in mind will help. I don't mean to sound so sanctimonious when I'm doing my podcast. No one even knows I'm doing this podcast. I'm literally doing this by myself. I've only published the first episode. I haven't marketed it at all. I haven't even told people I've really done this. Like I've said from day one, this is more for my own public, for my own consumption, for my own mental health than it is for public consumption. But I think we are at our most sanctimonious whenever we are reflecting, you know. So if you're not sanctimonious as a singular podcast host, you know, someone who's doing a solo podcast, you might be doing it wrong. Or maybe you're doing it right. If you find a way to be not so sanctimonious and you run a solo podcast, let me know. What's new with me? I just shot a Purple Mattress commercial. I didn't know Purple Mattress was a brand until I got the audition. It was a lot of fun. because it shot in my hometown of Austin, and my mom didn't know that I booked it. So I got my dad to pick me up from the airport when I booked it, and then I surprised her. And I'll share that video in the description of this episode. But it's starting to get play, so I'm getting now the questions of, oh my God, did I see in a Purple Mattress commercial? The answer is yes. I'm sitting on a mattress in my jammies while there's a spin class happening around me to show that you can sleep your way to the top. I did like the copy. Purple's got some good copywriters. I'll give them that. You know, that and the other thing that I get the most notoriety for is a sexual assault PSA that I acted in. I performed in it late 2019, and I mean, that's definitely what I'm recognized for the most now at this point, is being the douchebag, the sexual harassy guy, a role that I'm cast in all too often, in a sexual assault PSA. And I've done multiple sexual assault PSAs, both as the assailant and the victim. Which is funny, because it's like casting directors look at me and they're like, well, he's a straight white man, but he's weak. There's always something, you know, something that we could get out of this guy, whether he's being the assailant or the victim. A thought that I had: we pay, American citizens pay, for almost all the research and development that private companies eventually profit from. And call me crazy, but I think a universal base income is justified when you consider that Tesla wouldn't exist if it wasn't for you and me paying our goddamn taxes. A good example of that being the $500 million loan Elon Musk got from the government when Tesla was in dire straits. We paid that. So if you're going to profit enormously from a private company using publicly funded research and development, get me a slice of that! And without having to buy some goddamn Tesla shares. If we're funding all the research that goes behind every private company being profitable, literally funding yachts, third, fourth, fifth homes, and every extravagance you could expect, how is a UBI not justified? Because you have people who are like, oh, you can't do that, inflation, and also people are lazy and they don't deserve money. First of all, I don't even know if that's all that true. I think in most cases, you know, people who are using government programs aren't necessarily exploiting them. Of course that happens, but could you argue that they're exploiting them at any less of a scale than the billionaires? I mean, why are so many people sticking up for fucking billionaires? Because they have to know that the statistics of them ever hitting that tax bracket are lower than getting hit by lightning several times. I mean, is it just because they want to side with like the wealthy because they want to like be on a winning team? I mean, it's people love owning libs, right? So they look at billionaires as the antithesis of liberalism. Whether that's true or not, it's up to interpretation. But so they imbue these billionaires as kind of like their folk heroes, which is a funny way to label a billionaire, against the liberal crusade, which feels misguided. Because as far as I'm concerned, liberal and conservatives in the lower to even the upper middle classes have way more in common than anyone in the 0.1%, no matter what we perceive or whatever they say their political ideology is. The truth is, they have the GDP of a small nation at that point as their net worth. So they don't really care about politics the way we do. It doesn't affect their day to day. They have their own agenda. It just feels like, once again, the way that we interact with each other based on our differences and not so much what we do agree on, which is a calculated move. How do you divide a populace? One, you limit the number of things they can talk about. Good example of that, trans people in bathrooms. I had never once heard about any issue as it relates to trans people in bathrooms until that bill was getting talked about. So you, and then when that bill is introduced, that's all anyone could talk about. Why? Aren't there other more pressing things, not even just in the world, but even within the dynamic of trans, LGBTQ rights, all this stuff? So you limit the number of things people could talk about, and you see it now, because, oh God, cringe. I get weird knots in my stomach just saying this out loud. But it's true. When you see it on social media, in media in general, out and about, there's only like five things people are talking about at any given time. Five might even be generous. There's only a handful of topics that the algorithm deems we should be talking about this stuff. And do they want nuanced, truthful takes on these topics? No. They want to prop up this side of the argument, that side of the argument. So how do you control the masses? You limit what they can talk about, and then you turn up the volume on how they're saying it. This has been happening since the beginning of time, but now it's happening in the digital age. Well, beginning of time, I guess, of humans and government and social structures. We'll call it that. But now it's happening on a digital global scale, and I think we're really poorly equipped to combat it. And it's not your fault, because they have all the metrics of how this affects your behavior, and they're tweaking the data, the algorithm, the numbers, everything to just further push you down this rabbit hole they want you to go down. And who is the they that wants you to go down the rabbit hole? The motherfucking billionaires who own this shit, who owe you some kind of universal base income for doing all the fucking heavy lifting for the data and research and development that they're profiting from. Fuck them! So anyways, if I go on a fishing trip coming up and then I don't return from it, or I mysteriously go missing, you'll know why. I did an open mic at the Improv recently. I didn't get past. I thought I was going to. I did pretty well. My good buddy Austin Silver, who's a comedian, kind of my comedy buddy, we're both from Austin. Yes, his name is Austin. He's from Austin. Let's get over that fact. But do a lot of open mics together. He's a tough critic. He's a real son of a bitch. Love him to death, but he's a tough critic. And when I got off the stage at the Improv, he was like, damn, I think you got passed. And I didn't. So that hurt a little bit. That kind of sucked. I have a little bit of a history of people telling me they think I'm going to like make it to the next round of something, then I won't. I remember Ariel Isaac Norman. It was in 2019. I competed in Funniest Person in Austin. I did very well. And Ariel Isaac Norman, also someone who's not going out of their way to talk about how how well someone did if Ariel doesn't mean it, said, hey, I think you're going to pass. And I didn't. And I motherfucking didn't. And I know for a fact, at least one, likely two of the people who did get passed, did not earn it that night. Only based on the fact that their sets weren't that goddamn good. And I know their sets weren't that good because the audience didn't fucking laugh that much. But this is an old grievance. I've changed. I'm a calmer person. I actually am a very calm person until I get this blue microphone in front of me. And honestly, I close my eyes for this podcast. I have a hard time speaking at length if I have my eyes open and I'm just like looking around the room, and it almost limits me. So what are we going to do? What are we going to do? You know, I'd like to issue some retractions from last week's episode, because I mentioned, and I am working on a project that, you know, is going to be a show that hopefully, features Austin more prominently than, just in general, because Austin doesn't have any TV shows, is what I said in episode one. But after further review, there actually has been an Austin show. It was a show from MTV. I'm pulling up the TV show right now. It's called Austin Stories. Yep, it was a TV show that ran for all of 12 episodes, if that, on MTV, which ran from September of 1997 to January of 1998. So, episode 2, and I already have to issue a retraction. I'm sorry. I'm very, very sorry for having overlooked and glossed over the cult classic that is Austin Stories. And funny enough, I know people who are in Austin Stories, who either wrote for it or were in it, been on comedy shows with them, some of the old guards in the Austin, Texas community. Matty Sadler, I did a show with him, actually a bit of a sad story. Matt Sadler, Austin comedian, did a show with him July 2021, right when the Delta variant was coming out. And also did a show with a comedian who I know a long time named Chris Seeley. Just a few weeks after that show we did at a theater in Georgetown, Texas, Chris Seeley caught COVID and passed away at the age of 44. So, no crazy health complications, no nothing. Just a normal dude in his 40s, not old. A lot of people think that unless you're fat or old, you're going to be fine, and you just never know. So, I don't know. That was that show stands out to me because it was the last time I ever saw Chris. And also I met Matt for the first time. He'd always been like a cult legend, a cult figure in Austin comedy. And here we are in full circle because turns out he was one of the creative forces behind Austin Stories, the sitcom that never was. Well, that was, but for such a brief period of time, I think people probably wish they had another crack at it or got a longer shot. Why don't we have any TV shows in Austin, right? Write in with your answers. Once again, this continues to be helpful. I hope that this has been fun for you to listen to. Maybe you learned something, maybe you don't. Maybe I'm just kind of reiterating points that you already knew to some degree, but hopefully this lights a fire in you. I mean, look, Roe v. Wade is what got me to volunteer for the first time in a long time. And I mentioned this in the first episode. I am going to be, I thought it was going to be soup kitchen. It's actually a different thing. I'm going to be handing out mattresses to people in need. And that's going to be July 31st. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'll let y'all know how it goes. I'll provide you with pictures. And if you are interested in any volunteer opportunities, because if the world is trying to send us backwards, literally the only thing we can do is control what we can. And even as insignificant as you might think, an action like giving mattresses to people who need it or going to the soup kitchen, as insignificant as you think that is something tangible you are doing to move the world in the right direction. So defense budgets be damned, global warming and climate change be damned, Roe v. Wade be damned. It all sucks, and I'm sorry. I am. I don't mean to be a downer because I'm actually a consummate optimist at heart, but you can't solve any problem unless you know what the fucking problem is. You can't lie to yourselves. I think sometimes when we focus too much on microaggressions, we kind of overlook the aggressions, you know, the egregious ones. So if we stopped eating our own and ate the rich instead, I think y'all getting the idea. I'll be honest, I think the conspiracy against white men was started by rich white men. Yeah. I think they're, because when we talk about white men, I think we're talking about who controls what and all this stuff. It's a pretty small percentage of white men. And yes, there's like privilege that just goes into looking a certain way, just in the terms of, and like the sad truth is people don't fear you the same way. So, you know, there's a privilege associated with that, but I'm not in charge of any decisions. I really can't steer which way the world goes. But I do want to steer it in a way that's positive for people who are more tied to, like, what I would say is my socioeconomic status than, say, the socioeconomic status of Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk and that kind of thing. And the people in my status are a lot more diverse, you know? So I do think that the villainization of white man in general is in the best interest of the motherfucking billionaires, because they also know that a lot of white guys are liberal. There are a lot of liberal white men out there. I'm half white, but yeah. Socially, I'm quite liberal. Hope that's part's obvious. So, in whose best interest is it for me to be villainized by other liberals? Well, probably those assholes. So that way, we'd cannibalize each other, and y'all might focus on the microaggressions of the white men around you instead of the aggressions of the white men not around you. I might cut this whole conspiracy against white men out of my episode, because I don't want to alienate too many people right out the gate. Gonna have to give this a listen back, see how it holds up. I'm going to further explore this theory. I'll see what I can come up with. No promises, though. But you can expect some hard-hitting reporting, that's for sure. Results? TBD. But stick that in your corncob pipe and smoke it. White men are against the villainization of white men. But namely, the rich ones. You know, the billionaire types. The executives, the C-suites, the decision-makers. The circle jerkers. Circle jerkers are trying to pit you and me against each other, but we're not going to let them, because we're going to eat the rich. Or at least politely request a universal base income for funding their whole motherfucking lifestyle and ambitions. Okay. Well, this has been my lunch break. I should probably get back to work. Maybe one of these days I'll promote this podcast so people know it exists. But for now, I like just having something on Spotify. I literally commissioned someone to make a logo for a podcast I'm not even publicizing. I mean, why am I doing this? Clearly, as was stated in my thesis from day one, this is just a cheaper alternative to therapy. And maybe I'm due for another session or two before time. But before the time, you know, before things get too dire for me. But I'm okay. I'm actually okay. Just when you think about this stuff, you can go down some dark rabbit holes. I remain a consummate optimist and a warrior for light. Anyways, I love you guys. Thank you so much. This has been Brian Bogart Has a Podcast, The Podcast. We'll catch you on the next one. Hasta luego.